Welcome into the Wednesday edition of Robbie and Rexrode here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Joe Rexrode here with Adam Vingan in all week for Robbie Stanley, Michelle Knezovic, intern Hanley. Oh my gosh, I was halfway through my tweet about the show and then the show started, so I guess should I like take a pause to finish my tweet or should I
try
like
to tweet and talk, Joe?
Tweet and talk. Okay. Some CFB TV wars, comma, space. What else should I got to put in there? We got that we have Paul Kaharsky, we have Cameron Wolf.
Yes.
Going up on the show. We're going to hear from Chris Vanini on college football TV wars. We're going to talk some Preds. Right off the bat, you and I with our daily hockey coffee talk about hockey.
Is that your attempt at a New York accent?
Yeah. Well, sometimes I'll do a Kaharsky. He's like, Coach Vrabel. It doesn't sound like him at all, but that's okay. It's okay.
My parents would be very disappointed in you.
We also have... we have an interesting topic, which Vingan brought to the show this week, which I like a lot. Although it's based on an ESPN Insider article on the top cores of teams 25 and under and the Titans not ranking well. We're going to explore that in the 7 o'clock hour a little bit, the Titans and their core, their young core, why they are so low ranking. And whether maybe are they a little underrated there too? Potentially. We got Vingan. Maybe I should do this every show. Just recap what we're going to do. We got Vingan's vitriol later. We got the choices yours.
Yeah, give a little show rundown. Like it.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea, right? And I also I'm going to come right off the top here and apologize in advance. Katie and I, we got tickets to David Gray. Anyone for David Gray? David Gray, anyone? No? David
Bueller.
Gray?
Okay. Bueller.
Okay.
No.
Well, David Gray, his album White Ladder is, I would say, one of the great singer-songwriter creations, certainly of the past 25 years. It's the 20th anniversary. We had tickets to this pre-COVID, okay? And it finally came last night to Ascend, came back around to Ascend.
And it rained.
And it's the anniversary of White Ladder, his album... Actually came out in 98. It is an incredible album. In fact, I'm just going to absolutely barrage you with David Gray requests for intros, Michelle. And you guys probably will be like, oh, okay. It's amazing. But, yes. So it was already going to be a late night. I just dropped Katie off at the airport. She had to fly to Atlanta today for work, okay, before the show. So we knew it was going to be rough early going. And it was like, oh, an 8 o'clock show. I was hoping it was 7, but it's 8. Okay, well, you know, we'll stick it out. Freaking rains and delay. It doesn't start till I thought it was absolutely going to be canceled. It didn't start till 9:30 last night.
So what time did you get home last night?
So we got home at about 11:30.
Oh, that's not that bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you can, but it's not like I immediately snap your fingers and then you're asleep. You know what I mean?
Right. But I thought it might be like 1 o'clock or
yeah,
something like that.
That'd be brutal. But I'm working on like 4. So there's, let's say, so the typical gaffes, you know, near profanity, flubs of names, you know, screwing this or that up, it may be a little bit intensified
I'm
today.
Here. I'm just, here for you. Just,
and tonight I'm taking Caroline to Kill a Mockingbird at TPAC.
Oh, very nice. My parents saw
that.
It's
a heck of a week.
On Broadway.
Yeah.
They enjoyed it. That's when Jeff Daniels was in it.
I don't suppose he'll be in it tonight.
I doubt he's in the National Touring Company version of To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah. But we can hope. But yes. I bet you it'll be good anyway. So, David Gray, okay? The incredible artist. Everybody check out White Ladder. I swear to you, you will not be disappointed. Every single song on the album is fantastic. He played the whole album front to back last night. Shout out to David Gray. Also played some Bowie covers, which were very cool. So, Adam, we've been talking Preds at 6:30. We're going to switch it up and just go right now and talk some Preds. We've kind of been going through the various issues and topics that are relevant to the Nashville Predators. Today... I'd like to talk about the goalie situation with you.
Okay.
Because I find it very interesting, and I really thought we might have a very different goalie situation when the Matthew Tkachuk stuff was swirling around.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just believe Askarov is one of the – he's an asset who could command something, right? If you if you were really out looking to make a big move, he could have been, I thought, enticing potentially to the Flames. He's in the organization. There's going to be talk about when is he ready. But in the meantime, it's almost like people are forgetting that UC Soros is as good as he is. What do you think? How do you think this unfolds for the Preds?
It is interesting because I think we all assumed at the start of the offseason that the Predators would go with a goalie tandem this coming season of UC Soros and Connor Ingram. Connor, of course, had that fabulous game 2 against the Avalanche, had a rough go of it in the rest of the series, but Connor, I feel like, has reached a point where he is, you know, I don't want to say better than the AHL, but I feel like he has proved himself enough in the American League to warrant an opportunity to play in the NHL full time, or at least as a backup, but be the full time backup for the Predators. And then they threw us a curveball when they signed Kevin Lankinen to a 1-year, $1.5 million contract. Lankinen, of course, most recently a member of the Chicago Blackhawks. I think it was 2 seasons ago he was getting some early season Calder Trophy Rookie of the Year love, but then fell off, and then last season...
Not much love.
He was bad. And, of course, you have to take into account the fact that he was playing in front of a awful team, and that affects a goalie's numbers, but he was statistically, both traditional statistics and advanced statistics, one of the worst goalies in the league last year among those that actually qualify in terms of, you know, the number of games they played and starts and whatnot. So, you know, I think it was an interesting bet. You know, Lankinen is 27 and, you know, has shown some promise. And perhaps if you put him behind a better defensive team, though it's not saying much because the Blackhawks were not a good defensive team at all, maybe, you know, I feel like it's a relatively low risk signing, but it does make things interesting because, you know, one would assume that Lankinen, who does have starting experience in the NHL, would be UC Soros's backup. So what does that mean for Connor Ingram? Well, down in Milwaukee, you have Askarov, as you mentioned. They also have Devin Cooley, you know, who is a steady hand at the minor league level, who was re-signed earlier this summer. And then you have Ingram. That's a lot of that's a lot of goalies for an American League team. Excuse me. So it will be interesting to see what happens because Ingram is not waiver exempt. So if Ingram, you know, is waived during training camp, somebody can pick him up. And you know Ingram, you know, has enough tape on him that he is that teams, I think, would take a chance on him. At worst, he is a quality starting goaltender at the American League level. So even if he isn't someone who gets regular, you know, NHL time, you know, you can put him in as a starter on your AHL team and be in good shape. I mean, he has been one of the better goalies in the AHL over the past couple of years. So it is really interesting to see what happens. I doubt they would have signed Kevin Lankinen with the expectation that they were going to send him to the minor leagues. So there is a bit of a logjam in goal for the Predators from an organizational standpoint, and it will be fascinating to see how it unfolds.
Well, obviously, the Lankinen thing, surprising, very surprising to me. I just took that as either something happened with Ingram or they just decided based on the information they got this year that he's just – you know, they feel like they need to upgrade on him. I don't know how Lankinen is an upgrade. I think you do throw one awful season. You have to take that and you have to keep it in perspective. I mean, so when an organization makes a decision like that, Adam. So you mentioned the advanced stats, and like you said, you dig Yeah, look at all those numbers, and they tell the story of someone who's still goals, you know, above expected, all that stuff, like it's bad.
Yes.
Like beyond the fact that, you know, goals against and everything was bad for a terrible team. But how much more information does, like, an organization have that's not available on the interwebs, you know, that might contradict that information?
Well, of course, they have scouts and coaches that know more about this stuff than we do and have that intel. And there are numbers that are proprietary that teams track. So there are numbers that are available to us, and there are companies, like a company that I did a lot of work with, SportLogic, that do, you know, that farms out those same sorts of that same sort of intel to teams. I mean, I believe the Predators do work with SportLogic, as do a lot of teams in the NHL. And although the data given to the teams is a lot more extensive than the data that is given to me and other people who work with the service, so there is a lot more that they know than we do. And I have to imagine that those in the know in the Predators organization, of course, they've seen Kevin Lincoln in a lot because he's been in the division, but they know, this is not surprising. They know more than we do. But when you look at Lincoln's numbers, so he has, in his career, 2 years in the NHL, he has started 66 games. He is 25-29-11 with a 3.23 goals against average and .901 save percentage. He had an .891 save percentage last season. Like I said, one would hope that behind a more structured team that Lankinen could improve to at least league average. But you saw last season what happened when David Rittich was unable to provide consistent, you know, backup play. And I think that led, there were several factors, but I think that led to UC Saros being played more than he should have been. So, you know, you want a backup goaltender that can actually, you know, play and provide the Predators with solid goaltending on the rare nights that UC Saros isn't in goal. And that didn't happen last year, and I'm not sure if it's going to happen this year either, just based on Lincoln.
So if you were right now, someone said same everything costs, whatever, you're choosing your backup goalie, and your choices are either Lankinen or Ingram. Don't answer yet. Come on the other side. We'll get that answer from Adam Vinga, Robbie and Rexo, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rexo, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, The Game, Nashville app, live from the Hillside Medical Game Studios. And if you'd like to join this conversation, you can get on the phone or text line driven by WilsonCountyHoney.com, 615-737-1025. Also, you know what? You can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every day. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. So we're talking Preds. Are you impressing it?
You just did that as fast as Dave Matthews' guitar solo in that song.
Maybe he motivated me.
Not quite as fast as when you're listening to a commercial and at the end they have the disclaimer and the guy's talking very fast.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's like an auctioneer.
Yes.
Jared used to do some commercials when it, and I told, finally I was like, you can't do this. It was like, huh? Like, dude, you have to still say words. back on the Preds. Answer my question, Vingan. You are in charge of a hockey team, and it's like this person is going to be your backup to UC Saros for the season. First of all, I think I might look elsewhere altogether, but that's not an option. So you're picking between those two, Lankinen, Ingram.
I'm picking Connor Ingram, just because I still think there is, and this is a terrible, you know, sports word, upside to Connor Ingram that may not be there with Kevin Lankinen. Now, as I said, Lankinen is 27. I believe Ingram is 25. So still in the prime of his career. And I just pulled up his career American League numbers. He has played 149 career AHL games in the regular season. He has a career 2.41 goals against average and .919 save percentage in 149 AHL games. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
And a couple of years ago, I believe he made their all-rookie team. No, not their all-rookie team. Like he was, I think he was a first or second team all-star at the end of the season in the American League. He may have been a all-rookie team member, but that would have been when he wasn't with the Predators. But I don't know. I just, I've seen Lankinen's body of work in the NHL, and I haven't been impressed with it mostly. And like I said, I think what the Predators, I'm sure, are hoping, and I guess is what ultimately led them to signing Lankinen, is that if we put him on a better team with a more structured defense, that he will improve. And that's, I mean, that's the hard thing with goalies and quarterbacks and pitchers, because they are a singular position, their numbers, their numbers tend to, not pitchers, actually. I guess quarterbacks and goalies. I don't know if pitchers are. But the idea that, when you look at their numbers, there are a lot of other forces that come into account. Do you know what I'm saying? I'm not articulating this well.
No, I absolutely agree. That's why teams can win championships with so-so quarterbacks. That does happen. And right. It happens with goalies sometimes.
Right. So
great teams.
Yes. There have been, it's interesting to go through the list of teams recently that have won the Stanley Cup and look at their goaltending play and determine, how much that goalie really played into it. I mean
the guy in Florida fits the bill.
Bobrovsky?
No.
Oh, the other guy.
Vasilevsky.
Yeah. Sorry. Yes. Yeah, Vasilevsky is on track to be a Hall of Famer.
And also has been surrounded by greatness. I mean, that's just a lethal combination.
Right, I'm trying to think of the last time a team won the Stanley Cup with so-so goaltending.
Well, was that not the case this year? I mean, it was better than so-so, but it wasn't. It wasn't spectacular.
I don't know why. It's only been 3 months. Yeah, see,
it's been a few weeks.
Yeah, it's been a few weeks. No, you're exactly right. Darcy Kemper was fine.
Yeah.
Was fine. But the team in front of him was fantastic. So, yeah, I think Connor Ingram, from a personal standpoint, he's a great story. He has dealt with some mental health issues that basically cost him. It was the 2020-2021 season. He went into the NHL's player assistance program. He comes from a wonderful family.
I like how he approaches things.
Yeah, it's a really great story. It's easy to root for Connor Ingram, and I've gotten to know Connor and his family quite a bit over the past couple of years, and I really enjoy talking to them, and I remember I talked to his parents after game two. It was like 12:45 Central Time, and just hearing them, even though they lost the game.
He was incredible.
He was incredible, and talking to them about it. This was one of my favorite stories from this past season. So Ingram, he comes out. He does the news conference after game two, and he's a relative unknown to everybody outside of those of us here in Nashville, really. And he's doing a lot of get to know you questions. People are asking him about his background, and I think it was our friend Paul Skrbina who asked Connor about his parents being on the broadcast quite a bit and his parents looking incredibly nervous. And Paul asked Connor about his mom. And he said, and Connor's response was, "Is she still alive?" Because she's an incredibly nervous hockey mom. And I told her about that after the game. And she said that as she was walking into the building, she felt like her her limbs became like jello. Like she was that nervous. And the funny thing is, he didn't tell his parents. He knew the night before, of course, that he was starting game two. And his parents drove from rural Saskatchewan to Denver to be there in case he started, because they weren't able to make it to his NHL debut because of COVID-19 restrictions, crossing the border and whatnot. And he told them that he didn't know if he was going to start, even though he did, because he knew that if he told them, it would make them incredibly nervous.
Yeah.
And he, they didn't.
I guess if they're coming either way, then.
Right. Know. They didn't find out until that afternoon. They were at Coors Field. They took in a Rockies game, and they actually found out on the internet that he was starting because they don't talk to him on game days. So, but anyway, I just think that, you know, I think it's at this point, I just think that Connor has done enough to at least warrant a look at that position. You know, if, you know, Lankinen is a goaltender that, or someone like Lankinen is available every summer, you know, a mid to late 20s guy with some starting experience that can be had on the cheap. You know, I think this is the last season of Connor's contract. You know, give it a go and then make a decision. If he doesn't win the backup job, then you can let him go. But I just think that, you know, I think, you know, it would be, I don't think it would be great if they lost him, you know, in the organization. From, you know, not that Devin Cooley and Yaroslav Askarov can't hold it down in Milwaukee, but I think Connor's been good for the organization, and I think it would be a loss for sure.
I just, if you just take the very end, obviously you had the just awful all the way around performance to blow that game at Arizona and get yourself,
yes,
the matchup with Colorado. You have the game two you mentioned, which was just wowzer performance. And then I'd say the rest of around everything else with Connor Ingram and goal at the end there with Saros hurt was probably about what you'd expect.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I just, that latest information to me, I would take as overall encouraging. But they spent $1.5 million on Lankinen, so I suppose, I guess the question is, do they just view this as, yeah, Lankinen's just a better option, or do they view this as, let's find out?
Yeah, I mean, there will be competition.
There will be a competition. It's just like with the way, the money that you don't have to spend, you know, with this cap and everything, like, to me, it's like, is it worth fostering that competition for $1.5 million?
Yeah, I think
with a guy who was so bad last year.
And one thing to keep in mind is that if, let's just say, for the purpose of this conversation, that the Predators decided to go with Ingram and put Lankinen in the minors. First of all, Lankinen would have to clear waivers, but if he gets to Milwaukee, because of his cap hit, the Predators would have to carry a I think it's $375,000 charge on their cap because there's a threshold for a buried cap hit. So you can't be, you know, I think this was the Wade Redden rule back in the day with the New York Rangers, who signed the defenseman to this huge contract and then buried him in the minor leagues, and they didn't get any cap-related penalties, and they changed it around so that if a player making a certain amount of money per season is sent to the minors, there is a cap charge. It's not a big one. I think, like I said, it's 300. I think it's $375,000, which is not a lot, but it is something, and, you know, it's better than 1.5, I guess, but it is something to take into account when discussing this.
Logan on the text line, driven by WilsonConHenry.com, says, the Preds weren't very structured defensively at the end of last season. I know they've made some changes. Hope it works out, but Connor stood on his head in that game against Colorado. I stayed awake to watch because what he was doing in that game, deep down, I knew something was going to give, LOL. But, yeah, I mean, I think that's true, too. I think that they had some serious issues.
Yeah, it wasn't perfect.
D-zone issues.
It wasn't
as
perfect.
As part of their sort of late season fade.
Yeah, for sure. You know, the Predators, you know, weren't the top defensive team in the league by any stretch of the imagination. Generally speaking, though, I do think they, you know, I think John Hines has done a good job of building a more structured defensive zone alignment, if you want to call it that. But yeah, there were some hiccups, to say the least, down the stretch. But I do think, in general, they are fine, and the addition of Ryan McDonagh will help in that regard.
Yeah, absolutely. When we come back, we're going to hear from Chris Vanini of The Athletic on the wild things going on in college football. Robbie and Rex Show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Hey, Robbie Stanley here to tell you Twin Peaks is the best place to be for your fantasy football draft party, which includes a draft board, player stickers, free Wi-Fi, a $50 bonus for the commish, and a $5 bonus card for each drafter as well. When you're not on the clock, relax with one of Twin Peaks' refreshing 29-degree beers or order some of the fan favorites like the double stack nachos, loaded fries, and multiple flavors of boneless wings as well. Call Twin Peaks in Cool Springs to book your fantasy football draft party at 615-221.
Here on Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Joe Rexroad here, Adam Vingan in for Robbie Stanley, Michelle Knezevic, and we're going to talk a little college sports. My gosh, there's so much to talk about with college sports, and someone who knows so well about all of it, our friend from The Athletic, college football writer, and one of the greatest former college journalist slot receivers ever come out of Michigan State, Chris Vanini. Chris, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing well. Good to talk to you, Joe.
Well, you've got, I mean, I don't even know where to start, because first of all, you had a fantastic story about SMU, and it's actually, I love this story. You talked to Eric Dickerson, and he, of course, has revealed, you know, he got $1,000 a month and the gold Corvette and everything, but of course, the SMU days, and now you've got a collective there that is really stepping up. I love the full circle-ness of this story. With SMU, which of course got hit with the death penalty in 87. So first of all, tell us about that and what it means that an SMU has a collective stepping up to this extent.
Yeah, SMU, famously known for getting the death penalty in the 1980s, is now a leader in paying players once again. But it's just legally. And actually, the story I wrote last week started back in the spring, because SMU sent its coaches out on the road for recruiting, and they tweeted out a graphic about, like, hey, our coaches are going on the road. And in the graphic, they included a picture of a gold Trans Am, which anybody who remembers, that's the car that Texas A&M boosters gave to Eric Dickerson to try to get him to go to A&M. So my story idea was, like, hey, how do we look back upon old rule breakers, especially SMU, the death penalty, for getting in trouble for doing the things that are now legal, giving away cars, paying, you know, giving players money and stuff like that. So that was the original idea of the story. And as it started to come together, you know, I realized, hey, SMU's got a collective. They're starting to pay players again. And hey, next week, you know, yesterday, they've got a big announcement coming with a new collective. And this new collective will pay every football player and every men's basketball player, I believe scholarship player, $36,000 each for community service, various types of work and stuff like that. That's on top of another collective that has been spending about $1 million for various things. So you've got at least $4.5 million committed to SMU athletes legally, which is just kind of wild to come full circle.
On that other $1 million, and that's $1 million total spread around, is that correct?
That other million is the original collective, which has a deal with, I think, 20 to 30 football players for various things. It could be you got to come to some events, you provide some inside information on practice. And so it's not every player, but it's a handful that have their own other NIL deal with the other collective.
Gotcha. Yeah, and so we're seeing, because obviously you've got some of the more discussed and talked about, reported on collectives, you know, A&M and Tennessee and various, you know, big deals that we know about, right? But I feel like, but we also have, and this isn't the only place, where it's sort of like a baseline, basically like a salary. Like you come here, you're gonna have some comfort built in just by being in this program. I mean, that'd be great. Hey, it's not the massive deal for the star quarterback, but $36K if you're scholarship, you know, offensive guard or whatever, punter. I mean, that's nice, right? I mean, that's comfortable. Do you think, Chris, that we're going to get to the point where that's almost like just assumed and built in to most programs or a lot of programs?
Well, you got to have the money to do it. A couple weeks ago, Texas Tech announced similar situation where every football player was going to get $25,000. Oklahoma has one, Barry Switzer's involved, again, coming full circle, where every player is getting, I think, $40,000 to $50,000. And I think Texas has had one offensive lineman. BYU announced one last year for walk-on players. So if you have the money, it's something that's starting to happen. The issue is where it gets a little weird is kind of maybe might be an NCAA violation because the NCAA is not allowed to pay for play. You're not allowed to get money just for being on the team. So the way these collectives get around it is they're doing work. They're doing community service. They're coming to events. They're helping make backpacks for children or stuff like that. So that's what a lot of people have been waiting for is the NCAA going to enforce anything, really? And so far there has not been any sense that they will. And as a result, you've got more and more collectives stepping up to create what is essentially a salary for players in exchange for doing some work outside of football.
Do you think they ever will? I mean, where do you think that's going? I mean, you got people basically begging for congressional interference. I mean, I'm assuming no.
Yeah, I don't know. I do not think the idea of going to Congress is going to work. Congress is always dealing with more important things. It's not happening in this Congress. There are some people in college athletics who think, hey, if Republicans get control of Congress, we might be able to get some sort of skinny NIL deal where it's just some minimum stuff, except you've got Democratic senators like Chris Murphy and Cory Booker who want full-on athlete Bill of Rights type of stuff. They want a lot. So it's very unlikely that Congress is going to come to an agreement on any of these things, in which case, is the NCAA going to do anything? Nobody knows. They went and talked to the people at Miami. They went and talked to the people at BYU, but nothing more has happened, you know, as far as we know. And I think a lot of boosters have just been trying to call their bluff. And at this point, it's not clear that anything's going to happen.
Meanwhile, television is it's a battleground, and it's very fascinating. And for people in the SEC around here who don't know already, that beloved SEC on CBS theme song is going to be Big Ten on CBS in a few years. What's your big takeaway from the what it looks like it's going to be just another just big dividing line between the SEC and Big Ten, the two power conferences in terms of television? I'm stunned, Chris, that the Big Ten is going to get out of the ESPN game.
Yeah, essentially, you know, Fox has half of the next Big Ten deal. They've been working to see who the other half's going to be, and it's most likely going to be a mix of CBS, NBC, and maybe Amazon or Apple, potentially. And, you know, it is surprising. It's the first time in like 40 years that the Big Ten will not be on ESPN. And ESPN, you know, is what made college football a national sport. It's what it's what drives the conversation still. But the sense you've always kind of gotten from people in the Big Ten is that Kevin Warren likes the networks, and he likes the idea of exclusive windows and being treated as a big deal. You're going to get the Fox Big Noon game that's almost always going to be a big Big Ten game. You're going to get the big big CBS game at 3:30, a Big Ten game. And then you're going to get the big NBC game, another Big Ten game, at 7, 8 o'clock at night. And so that type of presentation, that type of audience you can reach has always been appealing to the Big Ten. And, yeah, it's not done yet, but it's most likely ESPN is going to be left out, which is probably good news for the Pac-12 and the Big 12, because now ESPN needs to fill some space that used to be filled by the Big Ten, and they may, you know, be able to pay more to the Big 12 and the Pac-12 to potentially keep those leagues, you know, together and around. But yeah, you've really got ESPN's got all of the SEC and none of the Big Ten, so you've really got kind of a dividing line here.
Yeah, it's fascinating, and I'm going to go to a tweet of yours. Chris Vanini taught me how to tweet, by the way, many years ago.
It's usually not a good thing when people say that.
I was so resistant to Twitter back in the day. Here's your tweet. Quote, a big question about the Big Ten TV deal, what impact it has on Notre Dame. Does the Big Ten likely having NBC and Irish rivals like USC, Michigan, Michigan State, Purdue, and more money to offer finally convince them to join? Do you think this has, if it goes this way, an impact on Notre Dame to the Big Ten?
It's very possible. Notre Dame for a long time now has gotten less money than if it had joined a conference. That's just part of the sacrifice they're willing to make because they want to be independent and the value that comes with them being independent. But it's getting to the point where Notre Dame, if they join the Big Ten, would be giving up less and less. You know, they could still be on NBC. they would still play USC every year, and you could bring back the Michigan State-Purdue rivalry games. I think one question will be, what does a potential college football playoff setup look like? You know, if we go to the 12-team model that we talked about last year, that was a pretty good setup for Notre Dame. So if we have that same model, maybe they don't want to join a conference. But if there's a new, different kind of format that puts the pressure on them, that's possible as well. I just think we're getting to a point now where Notre Dame would have less and less to give up other than essentially saying they're independent. They're only like half independent now anyway. They play five ACC games a year. So what happens if you flip out those five ACC games with eight or nine Big Ten games, many of which are your rivals anyway? It's not, at that point, it's not that much of a difference. That's the big question. That's the big realignment domino that has to fall if Notre Dame does or does not make a decision. That's kind of the thing holding everything together.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating. One quick last thing here, Chris. I melted down about this earlier. I know you've talked about this, talked to people about this. Please tell me that this stupid Power 5 only NCAA tournament idea is not going to gain traction.
Look, it's something that has been talked about among low major administrators for a while now, something that may or may not come out of the transformation committee, which is trying to create big changes in Division I. And it's a real concern, whether that means you take away the automatic bid for the mid-majors, whether that means an expanded field and lets more power conferences in. It's a very, very real concern that I feel like not enough college basketball people are talking about at the moment, and it may just spring up on them when they have a surprise. Automatic qualifiers for NCAA postseason in all sports is on the table of something that's being discussed. And yes, it's possible that the NCAA tournament, as we know it, one of the most popular events in sports, could change. I personally really hope it doesn't, but it's something I think people need to kind of keep an eye on.
We can't let it happen. We can't let it happen, Chris. I'm actually seriously thinking about it. You know, of course, you retweeted the TV report yesterday from the Florida Gulf Coast president. Man, I mean, that cannot be allowed. But we have time to fight it, at least. Chris Vanini, The Athletic, does a fantastic job covering college football and college sports. Thanks so much, Chris.
Yep, thanks for having me.
And when we come back on Robbie Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, we will react to that. I guess I'll try to avoid another meltdown, but the TV question, the SEC having ESPN potentially as its domain while the Big Ten is elsewhere, what will that mean to you as a fan? Coming up next, Robbie Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106 through the game, The Game, Nashville app. Talking some college sports. So the Chris Vanini, lot of stuff going on there. And by the way, we talked collectives and this idea of of almost like a here. What's your salary going to be at this school or that school? You know, like this is just you're going to get this money just for showing up, just for signing up. And USC has a, what the heck is the name of that? USC boosters are now defying the school. It was reported yesterday. I'm going to find this. So USC boosters, I liked the name. I think it might be like Student Body, right? Which Student Body left. You know, that was the famous back in the day, O.J. Simpson and so on and so forth. Marcus Allen, sweep left, sweep right. The school has tried to avoid this, has tried to avoid the collective pay up front, et cetera, although some would say, well, it's interesting that they got Jordan Addison from Pitt in what looked like just basically like a free agency, come here and here's some NIL sweetness for you. But
some coaches have floated the idea of a salary cap, right? Didn't Lane Kiffin mention something about that during SEC media days?
Media Day, yes.
What do you think about that idea?
Yeah. Well, Lane, let's salary cap the coaches, Lane. I mean, I like Lane, but
And I appreciate Lane's frankness on everything, but how does that make sense?
I mean, I suppose his argument was that it levels the playing field. No pun intended.
See, so the thing is, whenever we get into these discussions about, hey, let's limit this or stop that, okay, well, guess what? Then we'll just go back to when money is flowing under the table anyway.
Right.
I mean, there's more now, and it's all, we can all see things that are happening, and so people are freaking out. And I understand the absolute, I am not for just unlimited transfers, no waiting. I think that that will actually hurt more kids than it'll help. I think freedom is good. One-time transfer, good. Anytime transfer, I mean, then that's just, that really is just free agency. And I think you're just going to have a lot of people making decisions for the wrong reasons. But the idea of capping the money, to me, is just ridiculous. But anyway, the student body right, yeah, this is, it's student body right. It's the equivalent of a base salary. The LA Times story, playing, you know, the equivalent of a base salary to every Trojan football player. And again, the school is like, we are not doing this. And these boosters are like, yeah, we're going to do this.
How much is the base salary?
That I am not sure. I don't know that they've come up with a number. Now, we just talked about SMU. What is it, like 36K? Everybody's
going to
get.
I think that's what it was, yeah.
Yeah, there's no number yet reported with this collective, but I just think you're going to see that more and more. And look, it's not the spirit of NIL, okay? We could all agree on that. But it is being compensated for having something of extremely high value, which in basically anything else in the world is just fine. So anyway, that's just something that's going to keep happening, I believe. Interesting that that's one of those, like the rogue collective. Now, you know, other places like Tennessee, the people of Tennessee will tell you, we don't talk to them. I mean, we have nothing to do with the Spire Sports Collective and A&M and all that. But I think that there's some places where, you can tell it's more friendly than maybe this situation. You're just going to see more and more of them, though, until and unless something happens. I don't know what could happen. But what I also don't know, is Adam, is what is going to happen with Notre Dame. That's the thing that I keep thinking about more and more with this TV deal. Because I think this is really the bottom line. This is the big thing, the big prize. Yes, the Big Ten is they're going to gobble up some more Pac-12 programs, I think. They're going to have more programming for late night on those Saturdays. They're going to probably pick up Oregon and Washington, would be my guess. And ultimately, the ACC-SEC thing is really interesting because the grant of rights keeps ACC schools locked into like 2036. But I think ultimately we're going to see that movement. But Notre Dame is the big – I mean, that's the swing. You know, if either side can get that prize, that tilts the field, you know, for either side. Both sides are going to be incredibly rich and have – all kinds of funding to do whatever they want, and they're going to go well, well beyond everybody else in college athletics. But still, Notre Dame can tilt it. I've thought about this initially. I said, this is a Notre Dame move. This might do it for the Big Ten, getting NBC and all that. But you know what? I don't know, man. I'm not convinced as I think more about it, read more about it, that Notre Dame is gonna come off independence for this. And Notre Dame might just get a sweet deal that maybe not the $100 million plus that these schools and these conferences are getting and the payout. Like they're going to all get more than $100 million a year, but they want $75 million. That was reported a few months ago for their new deal. If you get that and you have the independence, I think maybe you just stick with it.
Yeah, I mean, Notre Dame, when this conversation first started about these super conferences and the like, you know, Notre Dame was they were the X factor, so to speak, because of their unique relationship with NBC and the fact that, you know, they are a monolith, basically. And it will be curious to see what happens there. You know, I know that Notre Dame in non-football sports is a member of the ACC.
Exactly, and that's and that, that affiliation in a lot more, of course, ACC football games, and they played one year actually in the conference. That's what it's for, right? I mean, it benefits all their other sports. But it would still make more sense. Well, I was going to say it makes more sense for them to be in the Big Ten.
No, geography doesn't matter.
Geography means nothing anyway. So
Notre Dame, they're staying independent.
Yeah, no question.
They have too much pride in that.
To me, it's just basically, I mean, the two questions there, they're going to have access to the playoff. They're going to. Like, there's no way, you know, first of all, and frankly, if Notre Dame has access as an independent, that to me helps erase what I think would be a stupid idea to keep this just to the two power leagues.
Mm-hmm.
That and then just the question of, like, are they going to actually fall behind because now all of a sudden Purdue's getting $120 million a year in their deal, and you're getting maybe you got 70 or 65 from your deal. I mean, long term, are you concerned about that? I don't know. I think it would have to be demonstrated to them that they are over a long haul actually going to be at a big disadvantage. I just don't know if that's the case. And I could see them getting $100 million plus potentially for a deal. I mean, they're only at 22 now, but things are just skyrocketing. And if you think about this too, the Big Ten is going to have these noon games that could also lead into Notre Dame programming. Like, I think, you know, the Fox will have the big game, but I think NBC may actually have a noon option for a smaller Big Ten game, which is a lead into the Notre Dame games, which could also sweeten the value of that.
I would just like this to all get done. I just want, you know, I just, it is very interesting. And one other thing that was brought up by Matt Fortuna, who works for The Athletic, covers college football, tweeted this yesterday. He said the Big Ten's next TV deal, which is expected to include CBS, starts in 2023-24, and that is also the last year of the SEC's current TV deal with CBS. How will CBS handle both?
That is
next
interesting.
Season?
Yeah.
So how do they handle both next season?
You got to respect the SEC for one year and only play that sweet intro for SEC games. Real quick on the text line, driven by WilsonGotHandle.com, Lance asks, wouldn't you think Vandy has a larger booster money pot than SMU? And of course, for those who don't know, well, we just talked to Chris Vanini. SMU has this collective and $36,000 for anybody who basically plays football there. I don't know about that. Certainly Vanderbilt has some very, very prominent, very, very wealthy boosters, but it is still a small private school. I mean, that oil money.
SMU?
That oil money down at SMU. I think it's a larger school. But regardless, it's still it's really intent. I mean, could Vanderbilt have a dynamite collective out front that does things like this, like the collective near Tennessee and Knoxville? Sure. It's different. You're not going to have these masses of alums who are like, hey, put in $50 and, you know, juice the pot a little bit. But, yeah, you could do that if you want to do that. Right now, the message from Vanderbilt is absolutely not. But it's going to be interesting as time goes on. If it becomes clear that you either do this or you really fall behind, how many places who initially dismiss the idea start to embrace it? When we come back, we are going to get into the Titans and a very interesting discussion about the young Titans and how they relate to the rest of the NFL. Robbie and Rex, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.